Welcome to Money Moves. This is a show that helps you take control of your financial life. No jargon, no judgment, just actionable financial advice. I am Jill Schlesinger. Today, we have such good fortune. We have Kayla Sabbah in the house, certified financial planner.
Yes.
Financial planner, investment advisor, Greenspring Advisors is where she is from. We have Mark Talercio, also a certified financial planner. We love having Kayla here because she can speak for an entire generation.
Yes, that's what I do.
Do you feel the pressure?
I'm feeling the pressure, but you know, I think I was chosen for a reason to be.
Yes, that is right, my girl. Okay, so Gen Z, born after 1997. Mm-hmm. You're Gen Z.
I am Gen Z.
You're speaking for the whole generation.
Yes.
Okay, let me give you this one. I saw this in the New York Times. Okay, by the way, I'm so freaking old that I had I get the Sunday print edition. I may be the last person to get a print edition. On the front cover of the business section of the New York Times recently, we have an entire article about Gen Z not being ambitious. The author is Emmy Nietfeld, 2015 Harvard grad, computer science major. She, this stuck out to me. She had a dorm room poster of Sheryl Sandberg. I mean, Emmy, come on. Are you kidding me? You're like leaning in that much. That's embarrassing. Okay. So anyway, she had written about her own career and this, that, and the other thing. And she decided she wanted to talk to graduating college students about their outlook. And here's the takeaway. They no longer believe in career ambition because they don't believe work will reliably pay off. One viral meme captured the prevailing sentiment that basically, quote, nobody under 40 right now expects good things to happen ever again. Kayla?
That's bullshit.
Oh my God.
And
Mark,
the perfect example is sitting right across from you.
Exactly. So Kayla, is this something that your generation, there is a bit of pessimism out there. We hear it all the time, but what's on the ground research telling us?
I think there is a lot of pessimism right now, whether you think it's valid or not. There's tons of pessimism. I think part of it is there is so much information flying at you all the time, and the news is often not positive. Mm. You get inundated on TikTok, on social media, on news platforms with negative press after negative press. And people in my generation feel like they had this grand bargain that if you work hard, if you try, you will get a good job. And they've seen that's not the case for everyone. But at the same time, there's still so much optimism. There are so many things that you can still achieve. And if you don't believe, if you don't have that sense of optimism, how will you get anywhere? You have to have some belief that your efforts will pay off.
And it doesn't have to be that it pays off in a substantially financially remunerative, how do you say that word? Remunerative. I'm having a hard time with that. It won't pay off. You won't pile up the cash. For example, if you say, I want to be an educator, you're not going to make a pile of money, but you can still be ambitious. You can say, I want to be the best English teacher in this high school or in this middle school. You can say, I am going into public service. You can say, I'm going even into academia, although you won't get a job. I think that the real challenge is what I'm keying in that you said is like, we followed this playbook that you oldsters laid out for us. Go to college. Take on debt if you have to. You'll make money. You will achieve. Where's the fly in the ointment in the playbook right now?
I think like that's a great example. So many kids were told, you know, if you do computer science, if you do tech, you are going to have an amazing career. And lots of those people find themselves without a job at this point. And, you know, they were promised or they worked really hard to get where they are. And then now they're struggling. But at the same time, there's still so much optimism. There's so many people who, if you work hard, you can still achieve what you want. And it doesn't feel like that all the time. But you really do have to have this optimism. We need to bring that back because you have to have faith that things will work out, or else why would you work hard?
You know, Mark Talercio, not known to be a great optimist, but you have always been ambitious and believed in yourself and your wife and in other people's ability. So when you hear this, what do you think?
I think Kayla just like hit the nail on the head for me. I think a lot of this comes down to the individual person and how you are wired. And are you a hard worker? Because I just have no tolerance for lazy people, laziness, or someone who doesn't want to get out there and put in the effort that's required to get to where you want to go. So, a lot of this for me is if you put in the hard work. I mean, again, Kayla is like the perfect example. I know she put in the hard work. She passed the damn CFP exam, right? It's not easy. That just doesn't happen. So if you're not looking for quick results and you're willing to put in the time and the work, I feel like there's an end result there that's going to be positive.
By the way, for those of you who think of like an Italian grandmother as like the warm, huggy Nona, that is not Mark.
No.
Mark is the other kind of Italian grandmother who's like, get off your ass, get a job and do something. I am sort of in between. I absolutely have compassion and empathy for a generation that came up and is somewhat unlucky. And we've talked about this before, that you can be unlucky about when you graduate. You can be unlucky when you retire. But I do think one of the things that is important as you go looking ahead is that you don't have ambition for ambition's sake. You have ambition because you're going to spend a lot of time at work and you want to try to find something in this that's going to feed you. Sometimes I talk to people and they're like, the job itself I don't love, but I love the people I work with. Or I feel like at the end of the day, I'm able to pay my bills and do something right for my family. I do think there's an enormous amount of pressure with social media. People who are like, find your joy, happiness, baloney. I can't stand that. And everybody, and Mark knows this, and anyone who listens to me over in our other show knows that I think that the whole happiness trope is annoying because it's like a high bar. Some days you're going to be happy. Some days you're going to feel sad. Some days you're going to like your job. You're going to find something great. Other days you're going to be like, oh, this sucks. And that's life. That is part of the human experience. So Gen Z, if you're listening and if you're watching, know that we are here for you. Are you looking for a little ambition? You want a little kick in the ass? Or do you want a little cheerleading? We can do either one. Mark, the Italian Nona, he can give you the kick in the ass.
Tough love, tough love.
Tough love, Mark. Aunt Jill, maybe Sister Kayla, we can kind of encourage you. We can give you that warmth. We can nudge you along. Okay, so we have a jillionaire question. It's one of the jillionaires in my life. So, if you're friends with me, be careful because I could use you on our show. Couple is about to do a home improvement project. They have an investment account, which has twice as much money in that account than they'll need for their home improvement. But they are concerned about selling the assets in the account to pay for the home improvement because they'll have taxes. Therefore, they were considering a home equity line of credit or a home equity loan. But on the other hand, they didn't want to go ahead and like get a home equity loan because rates are so high. So they said, what do you think? I said, well, I think it's okay to pay taxes. Like, this is part of your world. But then I went into the account and I was trying to figure out, like, what did they own? And inside of this account, which made me think, like, twice, because they said, well, we work with a financial advisor. So when I went in and looked at it, not only was it, I was, like, a little bit confused because there's a stock fund. There's bond fund. Mm-hmm. There is a NASDAQ fund, a triple Q fund. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of asset allocation funds. And I was like, all over the place. And I said, hey, did these people talk to you about the investments? No, because it was sort of like we took what the father and the mother's allocation was and we just did it for the daughter. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then I was like, wait a minute. These funds are expensive. Mark, you're going to die. When I went and looked at up some of these funds, the costs of the funds were anywhere from 0.5% to 1% a year. And these people are getting charged a fee on top of that. So, Mark, how are you feeling about 0.5% to 1% for managed mutual funds?
Not liking it, but this is something we see all the time. We always get screenshots from our listeners with, retirement accounts or brokerage accounts. They really don't have an idea of what's going on inside these accounts. And, you kind of lift up the hood and see, and they have, you know, 20, 25 different funds, and it's just, it's a mess.
Kayla, how many funds does somebody need in, like, okay, I know this is a super duper sweeping generalization, but how many funds generally do people need to get themselves started?
I think when you're first starting out, if you have, you know, if it's a small dollar amount, you could have one. You could have one or two funds. You do not need to have a lot, and you don't need to overcomplicate it. In fact, when you're starting out, I actually think it makes more sense to keep it simple because there are so many funds out there, mutual funds and ETFs, where you can be really diversified automatically without having to own so many. I think it could be completely fine to have one or two. And then as you grow your wealth, you can start to add in more funds where it makes sense. And there's some tax loss harvesting benefits. There's some rebalancing benefits. But to start out, you really do not need to make it complicated.
So Mark, what does it cost to buy a index fund or an exchange traded fund that invests or mirrors an index? How much is that every year?
You can actually find some that are virtually free.
And so, like, what is there a justification ever to buy something that costs so much more than an index?
The justification that they will make is that oftentimes these funds are active. So they're trying to beat the index fund. So that's the argument. It costs more to do these sorts of trading within a mutual fund. So they'll argue that we're trying to beat these index funds. Therefore, you should pay us more. But there's lots of issues with that. I know you know my stance on active funds. So
active versus passive, yes. Everybody. Here's your quick lesson. Do you want to hire somebody for 1% or 0.5% a year to try to beat the index? Or do you want to just buy the index? And when we look at all the data going back probably 100 years or so, active funds generally are not able to beat the index. And you know what? Even if they do, it's not the same fund every year. So you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
So can we just tell people to use index funds and go to sleep at night?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big fan of active funds because I think a part of it is regardless of all the data in the world, even if you have the best traders, the best knowledge, nobody can predict the future. And there's an element of it that there's just things that are out of your control. When COVID happened, nobody could predict that, even the best trader. So I think fundamentally spreading out your risk, being really well diversified and sticking with something a little bit more index or passive like, not only oftentimes beats active funds over long periods of time, but it's far, far less expensive.
Okay, so the story ends that I basically this morning at 5:30 a.m. sent my friends a email and said, here are the funds that I think I would sell to pay for your construction project. We need to have a conversation about how you're going to fire this financial advisor. Kayla, what's the kindest way for this couple to fire the person? It's not to indict them. It's not to inflame them. Can they just write a nice letter and say, thank you so much. We seek something different.
I think it's completely fine to do that. If you have a strong relationship with the advisor, it might be nice to have a conversation and say, this just doesn't meet our needs anymore. We don't want to pay this cost anymore. But at the end of the day, this is your money and you should be completely comfortable with it. And if you're not feeling like you are getting the needs that you want out of the advisor, it's completely within your right and you should very much leave.
Mark, are you ready to have the breakup note on a Post-it note? It's going to be like a little bit of a Sex and the City theme every week.
Yeah, when Berger did the Post-it with Carrie and Carrie just like threw the vase across the floor.
Isaac has his head in his hand as you mentioned Berger and Sex and the City. I told you Berger. That he's really a gay man, Isaac. You didn't believe
Ron Livingston, one of my favorites. I want to ask Kayla though, because this also comes back to one of the recurring themes with us, Jill, that your friends had this account with the funds there, but they were kind of scared of paying taxes. So they're even entertaining the thought of taking out a HELOC. Like, no. Kayla, you have a brokerage account, right? The money's there. That's what it's for, right?
Yes, I 100% agree.
How do you manage everyone's like anxiety about their stupid taxes?
If you have taxes, it means you made money.
Like, right.
It's a great thing. I mean, it's not fun to pay taxes. Nobody likes it, but it means that you did a good job. And depending on when they're going to sell the home, you could do it over time. You could limit how much taxes you're taking in 1 year. You could be really strategic about it. But yeah, don't stay in a fund that you don't like. Don't pause your life and don't take out a high interest loan to fund a home when you have the money there.
And don't work with an advisor who's not working in your best interest. And when you're getting charged 82.82% a year, let me just tell you right now, not worth it.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10. The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So when you're watching us or you're listening to us, you know you can always send us a comment. And we got a YouTube comment from Carol. And so we had a conversation about how we thought that the wealthy parents should maybe try to give some of their money away during their lives rather than have their kids wait until they die. And Carol wrote in, I love this comment, like, if I found out that my kids were greedily awaiting my demise just to get my inheritance, I would probably give my money to charity. So Kayla, as someone who deals with multi-generational families as a financial planner and an investment advisor, how do you thread this needle? How do you thread the needle of the parent doesn't want the kid just to be relying on their money? And on the other hand, kids like, there's money there. Why do I have to wait till you die to get the money?
I think this is such a personal situation. It's really hard to talk about in broad strokes because everybody has such a different relationship with their kids. They set different values for their kids. But I think it's not super uncommon. You may be surprised, but it's not super uncommon that their parents don't share how much money they actually have. They kind of keep it close to the vest. I've seen that a lot just because they don't want their kid to expect this large lump sum.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people want their kids to be launched, but at the end of the day, they want them to have a cushion, and there's lots of people who want to strike that balance. And then some people say, I want them to be completely taken care of. I don't want them to worry. So it is really personal, but I think it's super important to have a conversation with your kid
mm-hmm.
about it.
Mark, are you more in favor of the Carol kind of, like, it seems like Carol's kind of pissed about this. And I'm like, well, why is she so pissed? It's not like they're greedily awaiting. It's sort of like you're sitting on a pile of cash. And listen, this assumes that, like, you have the money to be able to give it during your life. But, like, why is this? It feels very it's just weird to me. It's like you sort of want to help, but you don't want to enable, but you also don't want them to like greedily wait for you to die, but you do have money and you're not giving it to them. What's your feeling about this one, Mark?
I feel like we've spoken to Carol at some point over the years. She knew her kids were just basically like counting down to days until they would collect their inheritance. And she was just like, oh, she was pissed off about it.
Well, maybe her kids are bad. You know, there is that. Maybe she just has bad spawn, in which case bad parenting or bad luck, one of the two. Anyway,
and she would probably know that, right? She would probably know that. I was also going to...
I like the parent who's like, my kid is a complete screw up. And
I was going to ask Kayla, do you see, like, we get this a lot, Kayla, in terms of inheritance. You know, you wait until you actually pass away to give out your inheritance, or do you see a lot of families kind of giving it out during their lifetime so they can see, you know, be rewarded with that gift to their kids while they're still around?
I mean, it's a mix, but I would say it's becoming more common that people want to give to their kids during their life. They want to see them buy a home. They want to see them have a lavish wedding, especially grandparents. Grandparents love spoiling their grandkids and they want to do that during their life, for sure.
I mean, my mother not like that so much, thankfully, since I don't have children. So I say to my sister all the time, like, mommy's not giving away all that money right now to your kids. She gives it to us first. Thanks, Mom. Okay, gang, it is time for the TikTok Takedown. Today, we are joined by a competing Money Moves person. I know a lot of you said that Money Moves was taken. This is Money Moves with Lydia, not to be confused with Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger. Let's take a listen and a look, and we'll come back on the other side and determine whether or not this is actually legitimate advice.
These are the five things I would never do with my money coming from someone that did taxes for the ultra wealthy. Number one, I would never keep my money all in cash. Wealthy people like to use their money for them, so most of the time they're investing or buying gold or using their money in ways that would actually make them more money. Number two, I would never buy liabilities just to look rich. Most of the time wealthy people buy assets first and then they buy the things that they want second. Number three, I would never have just one source of income. Most of the time, my wealthy clients would have multiple streams of income because you never know what could happen in the economy. Number four is I would never ignore taxes. Taxes are generally the biggest expense to a business owner, and wealthy people love learning about tax strategy and making sure that they know all the loopholes when it comes to saving money. Number five is I would never wait to start investing. The best time to start is now because you let all the compounding interest do all the work for you. If you want to learn how to start investing in 2026 using all my strategies that I learned from my wealthy clients, just come and invest and I'll send you my free starter investing guide. Make sure to follow for our money moves that actually build wealth.
Okay, she had me till the pitch at the end. Okay, let us go through these five things. Mark Tallercio from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn. Kayla Sabah here in the studio with us, certified financial planner from Greenspring Advisors. Okay, Kayla, I'm not actually worried about the five things. She's kind of okay.
Well,
don't keep all your money.
Liked.
What are you saying, Mark?
One of them I actually liked.
All right.
From beginning to end.
Okay. All cash. Don't keep all your money in cash. Although she did say rich people buy gold and other investments.
Yeah,
that was the only thing that was dopey. Then she said, don't have one source of income. I don't know. A lot of people can't do that, though.
Yeah.
Not so easy.
I think people put a lot of emphasis on having passive income, and there's generally lots of work that goes into having passive income or multiple streams of income, and I don't think it's something that's broad advice that everyone should be taking.
Yeah,
so that one I feel iffy.
So.
Yeah.
Don't ignore taxes. That seems smart.
Yeah.
But then she said in the same part, she said, look for every available loophole.
Yeah, loophole is not a word I like, but use the tax code to your advantage. I would say it that way. She likes loophole. Don't wait to invest is good.
I didn't
get the buy the liability thing. What was that?
That was confusing to me too.
I think she's saying like, don't buy the big fancy house just for appearances. Buy something that you actually need first.
I like that too. She didn't say anything that really thought was really bad, but it wasn't anything groundbreaking. Don't keep all of your money in cash. Okay. Invest right away. Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
But she's not giving me the sense that she's doing deep analysis or has any sort of certification. And at the end, when she said free guide, I have a sense that it's not going to be free the whole time.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be free. It goes, here's my free guide. And then sign up for my class and then do this and do that.
So,
she's cute. I mean,
so
that's nice.
I feel like we should start rating these. The best thing she said was the best time to invest is now. Yes, that was literally the best thing she said. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, what are we going to give her?
I'm going to say, you go first.
Well, I've seen your other ones.
Okay.
I've watched all of your episodes, and there have been some that really were hard. They were hard for me to sit through. And there were some that really were hard. She didn't say anything that was really tough for me to, like, something that I strongly disagreed with. So I'm thinking five.
That's what I was thinking, you know? A five. What do you say, Mark?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. We're five across the board.
Wow.
All right. So a five. It's not terrible. It's just not really actionable. And by the way, if you want, like, actionable financial advice and you want to actually talk to people who are certified as financial planners, you should get in touch with us. You should go to JillOnMoney.com. You should click the Contact Us button. You should write us a note, upload a video. It can be a very specific thing that you see. It may be a video that you see and you want to know whether or not it's legit or not. We'll do it in the TikTok takedown. Or a question that you have, we'd love to hear from you. As always, we want to thank you so much for watching. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe and follow us on YouTube. Leave us comments there. Say nice things about all the wonderful people who make this show happen. They're behind the scenes. There's Alan Pang. There's Justin Sherman. There's Isaac Grafstein. There's Emma Osman. There's Samara Lipman. There is, who else? Oh, there are the two overlords. There's the deputy overlord. He's newish, like a month into it. He's doing pretty well. And the overlord in chief. One day we will reveal who they are. The day that we are canceled, probably. That would be the best time to do it. Thank you so much for watching. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next time.
I'm Audie Cornish.
I'm Ari Shapiro, and it's engagement party.
It is engagement party.
And we get to talk about what we're obsessed with, what we're engaged with, what we need to process with a friend. Big question, are we running out of protein? That was a question that The Atlantic recently posed. Wait, I want to share my headline.
Okay.
No way. Get it?
The
W-H-E-Y.
Way, like, you cleared way. Both physical and psychological space for that joke. Follow Engagement Party.
Wherever you get your podcasts,